You're listening to the Regional Update. I'm Jessica Strauss. I'm the Weed Smart Project Lead. And in this podcast, we catch up with somebody from the regions, whether it be the North, South or Western, each month, and we find out what's happening in their patch in regards to weed control. Let's get into it.
We are standing with Sandon Knipe, and he's a grower in the, what area would you call this exactly?
This is the Avon Valley. So we're currently, the farm we're at today is called Spencer's Brook, which is on the west side of Northam. So this farm here is our home farm, and we've been here now for, I think, about roughly 70 years. So I'm the fourth generation back on this farm, and we've grown our business away from this area. We've pushed out towards the east of town, out towards Jennapullin out there. Was mainly off the back of sort of trying to chase a bit drier climate, better suited to broadacre cropping, which is interesting because over the last couple of years, sort of we've seen this farm, as being Spencer's Brook, perform a lot better as our practices get better, as we manage our water, and also in the drier years as well, it works really well as a mitigation for drought risk, really, because if we get a dry season out of the east side of town, then the west side of town normally goes all right, which gives you a bit of confidence as a grower to continue to keep doing what you're doing, and it helps you sleep that little bit better at night, really.
And you're a mixed farming operation, but you were talking before about doing continuous cropping. And can you tell us a little bit about what you're growing and how many sheep you're running and that kind of thing?
So our farm, we crop about 3,500 hectares, and then we have about 1,000 hectares of non-arable country. In the non-arable country, over winter, we run about 4,000 ewes, which are an ultra-white shedding sheep. We find this running the ultra whites really good from a management perspective versus wool. We used to be merino growers, but we made the shift back in the early 2000s, mainly because there wasn't enough hours in the day to do everything, and we sort of wanted to push our business towards cropping, as we saw that as a greater source of income, and that's probably a little bit more fun with all the flash toys which come with broadacre cropping. So now, we run a continuous cropping. We don't take any paddocks out for pasture. We do that because mainly we don't need the country over winter to house our flock. And there's more we've found that we can make more money by cropping, which comes with its own range of challenges from a weed management perspective, as you're limited to sort of what you can use and what you can grow to manage your weeds.
We were talking earlier and you said that you ran chaff carts for a number of years. Can you talk us through, why you initially used chaff carts and why you moved away from them in recent times?
So we bought our first chaff cart back in 2014, and that was my dad and my uncle. They purchased a new header, and weed seed control was becoming an issue. Back in 2014, weed seed mills weren't really a thing. I think the early Tagalon versions were sort of popping their heads up, but they had their own range of challenges. Running the chaff cart worked really well with the sheep operation we found in the canola. The sheep did really well off it because they didn't have to look as hard for feed over summer. And same as the wheat and barley. We used to grow a lot of straw as well. So in the dry years, we'd actually put everything into the chaff cart and then push the dumps out and bale the dumps as a way to, not be as hard on our balers and get as much straw as we could, really, as the windrows were quite small. In recent times, we're all trying to do more and more, and we're running out of time to burn, and we are trying to move our business away from burning, as well as just for a range of issues, mainly being social license, time, more nutrient management, trying to retain our nutrients in our paddocks, and mainly just trying to simplify our program, and that's pushed us to move towards weed seed mills.
Yeah, so this is a recent purchase. So I think you said you've done one season with the mills. How did it go?
So in WA last year, we had a really phenomenal season, which I know a lot of growers were all really grateful for. So it wasn't a great year to run weed seed mills, as there was a large amount of produce or product trying to go through the header, and the header was running at peak capacity without it. So we actually didn't manage, and we didn't end up using our mills last season because of the horsepower required to run these things. It was taking way too much out of the header. And yeah, we sort of just wanted to get the crop off and without harvesting through till end of February. So we actually made the management, or the decision to turn them off and just go back to conventional, just out the back and spread, which wasn't ideal. But yeah, sometimes you've just got to get the crop off really, and yes, which made it hard. But this season we bought a second header. We went and purchased a second-hand header, and we plan to run mills on both headers. And by doing that, it'll allow us to do the job properly and not really cut any corners.
Yeah, that makes sense. And one of the things you mentioned when we were chatting earlier was that, you know, we know that a lot of growers have had issues getting through crops like canola with the mills on the header. What's your plan of attack? Can you share that with the listeners?
Well, we've got the Terminator, and they do have a high flow mill option. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. In the canola, I'm not too worried if we have to turn them off, as we normally cut quite hard, a lot higher. So you're only really probably going to pick up a little bit of radish, and a lot of the ryegrass is going to be at the bottom of the canopy anyway. So you're not really going to get much there. So yeah, we can run it in the canola, we will, but yeah, if not, we won't be scared to turn them off and then focus on the wheat and the barley. With a lot of these new varieties we're growing, especially the hybrids, we're getting a lot of biomass in the paddock, a lot of stalk, which is rather challenging to put air seeders through, and blockages aren't much fun. So this season, like a lot of people in the air, well, I think about three growers in the air have also made the same decision. We purchased a Mandago stubble cruncher, which we use to crunch our stubble, and yeah, that was phenomenal how well that machine worked. It does come with a cost, of course, but yeah, in terms of preparing your seed beds, it does a lot better. Well, it does a really good job, and it just takes away that problem knowing that when you're out there at, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, moisture comes in, you're not going to be worried about making big clumps behind your air seeder and making a mess of things.
Yeah, so the stubble cruncher, it sounds very innovative. And so, yeah, let's have a bit of a chat about how seeding has gone for you and what your plan of attack this year has been.
Seeding this year has gone really well. We're rather fortunate to get an early break here, which we're extremely grateful for. It allowed us to get our canola in. Yeah, we sort of cranked up first week of April and got our canola in, and a lot of it's starting to receive its second spray now. As for the weeds as well, by having that early break, it got a lot of winter weeds germinated, a lot of radish and a lot of ryegrass come up, which has allowed for an awesome opportunity for a double knot, get a little bit of different chemistry over the paddock, and really control those ryegrass numbers, which have built their way up since we've had two wet seasons now, which sort of allows for ryegrass to get away, especially your Sakura runs out of leads when it gets rather wet.
Yeah, you're mentioning ryegrass is, probably your biggest weed issue. What other tactics besides, the double knock and harvest weed seed control are you using to get on top of ryegrass and your other weeds?
We run a rather, not a tight canola rotation, but we do rely pretty heavily on our Roundup Ready canolas just to help bring that in line. We're currently at a two-year cereal, one-year canola rotation. I don't like to go too close, mainly just for disease, and the canola is pretty hard on the country. So it's, using the Roundup Ready and the Select option at the moment is doing really good things for our ryegrass control, and as well as the use of pomizomide at early on. It's helping bring it into check. One thing that really excites me is probably going to be OptiGly as that comes through, and it's just another option in the toolbox really to take a bit of pressure off our Roundup, and we can use Roundup, Select and OptiGly. That, or the Liberty Link actually, I think it's the correct term. That'll make a big difference. Spread everything a little bit further and hopefully push all these products we've got further into the future so we can continue to be sustainable.
And is resistance an issue for you guys at all? Is that something that you're testing for at all?
We did some resistance testing harvest this year. Our agronomist, collected a few samples, some radish and a bit of ryegrass, which we've sent down to UWA this year to be tested. We're still waiting on those results. Ideally, they would have probably been back before the start of season. So they would, you could help, would help you make some management decisions. But, that's the way it is. But, I think there definitely would be some resistance, probably to ryegrass life on ryegrass. It's one in five paddocks. One in five paddocks do have it. So, I do have a one paddock, which I reckon I do have a little bit of it in, but the numbers are very small and the spot's very isolated. So, one that I'll definitely keep an eye on is in that paddock, and it just makes you mindful as well. It doesn't scare you too much. It just changes your management practices, and it might be you're just sowing that paddock a little bit later and trying to get a rain on it so you can get a germination and get paracot on it or a group G or something like that to help control it, sort of doing that, taking that pressure off the preems as well.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have to follow up with Roberto Busi at UWA for you. We sit next to him in the office. Sandon, earlier we were chatting a bit about the cost of production and how for you, in many respects, it's doubled. Can you talk to that a bit and what's going on for you guys?
Yeah, probably one of the biggest challenges we're all sort of faced with in ag at the moment is that rising cost of inputs. We've come off a really expensive fertilizer year being 2022. 2023, our phosphates were still, at the top end of things, but nitrogen has softened, which is rather good for us as we farm in that high rainfall zone, we do try and chase sort of the top end of the yield when the opportunity presents. So that will help us there. Cost of machinery is a concern at the moment, as that's a market that normally doesn't fluctuate. Not like the fertilizer does. So we've seen some really big increases in prices, especially on tractors and headers and boom sprays over the last essentially 2 years, and that's pushed through to the used secondhand market as well. From where we were buying machines at, 3 years ago to where we've come up to replace them, and the price has almost doubled. It's pretty hard to stomach that, especially as essentially what you're purchasing is the same machine. Like it's not like it's the ubiquitous thing. It's just a little bit shinier paint and some new tires on the machine. So it's not, bang for buck. It's sort of not that great at the moment.
And how's that influencing your forward planning? Are you making any changes based on the economics of replacing machinery, for example?
Hard for us. We've just gone through a succession. So, we're sort of trying to be a little bit more conservative at the moment. But we probably will look to drive our machines, which aren't as crucial. So like our headers, for example, we'll probably try to drive them a lot longer than what we used to, mainly – yeah, just especially till we run till if one breaks down, you always pull the other one up and we'll pull the broken one up and get it going. And at least you've always got one, or hopefully always one going. Our spray is a really important machine for us. We can get too wet here, and we do it. Yeah, so that our spray really can't afford for that to go down. So that's one we'll look to try and keep regularly updated, as well as there's a lot of new technology which is coming out in sprays as well. So when you look at trading in your machine, which you've got at the moment, to what you're buying next time, essentially, there are improvements, and you are picking up those, 2%, 3%, 4% production gains from these machines, which is helpful. And then as for the tractors, we'll just keep them rolling. But where it's at the moment, though, we can afford to put more parts into these machines and, afford to send them into town and spend a decent amount of money on them, get them all fixed up and keep running them again, because that cost of the new one is so great.
All right. And anything else you want to leave listeners with? Anything else around this time of year that you're doing a bit differently or that you think is important to take note of?
No, not really. Just, good luck to all the growers out there for this season, and hopefully it's a rewarding one. And, so there we go.
Thanks for having us.
No worries. See ya.